Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports on Global Patriot Radio here at blogtalkradio.com for Wednesday, April the 20th, 2022. It's my oldest niece's 49th birthday. Yes, I feel very, very old. Yes, indeed I do. But hey, I'm young at heart. Anyway, it's Wednesday, April the 20th, 2022. I am Hank Jones, Hank Jones Poly Sports, every Wednesday here on Global Patriot Radio. We have great shows the rest of the week as well. Mondays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al, Mamma Mia, No Sharia. Tuesdays at 6 o'clock Eastern Time, Eric is in with the Cross and Crescent discussion. That is a compare and contrast, but really more, it's a compare and contrast of Christianity and Islam, but other religions as well. And much like Vito and Al's show, it discusses how Islam has sought to impose its will in the form of Sharia law in this country. Wednesdays, of course, 5:30, that's me, Hank Jones, with Hank Jones Poly Sports. We talk politics, we talk sports, we talk about those fortunate and or unfortunate times when the two collide. Thursdays, 6 o'clock Eastern, Paul Sutliff is in with the Sutliffian Report. Manor has some good authors on. Paul himself is a published author, by the way. Fridays, usually around noon, Conservative Casual Friday with Andrew Herod. And again, Andrew has some very interesting guests. I actually called in on the show one of the times that I was available at noon on a Friday. In that particular time, they were talking about, I don't want to say organized religion, but institutional religion, you know, mainline denominations, and how those have become much less about Christianity than they have been about power and ideology. And then Saturday nights at 10 o'clock to midnight, Revealing the Truth About Islam with Usama Dakduk, Minister Usama Dakduk, and the beautiful Christy. And then Sundays, Eric is back. Eric's back at 3 o'clock Eastern Time with Real Interfaith Dialogue. And again, as I have mentioned before, Sunday, that's one you have to download an app. Now, some of these also simulcast on YouTube. I believe Eric does. I believe Usama and Christy also do. Hey, if you want to contact me anytime, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Go on Facebook and just type in Hank Jones Poly Sports, although I don't interact as much there. Go on Twitter, though. I'm there pretty much daily, at hpolysports. I retweet. I throw out my sarcastic, snarky humor, all that good stuff. Also joining me tonight, my wife and little Aussie are in the house. Although wife's getting ready to head out to dinner with her father and brother-in-law. I was invited, but hey, the show comes first on Wednesdays. Yes, it does. Welcome Indy Hawk, KB, to the chat room. Big Sister and Sue from New Mexico are on the phones. And that's our last item. If you want to call in, 319-527-6706. That allows you to listen, but it also allows you to ask a question or pipe in and say, Hank, you're full of whatever. Again, 319-527-6706. Dial in, listen along, and if you want to talk, hit the one. A little icon comes up that says, hey, I have something to say. And we all have something to say. We should be heard. Let's get to our obits. Last Thursday, we lost Mike Bossy. Mike Bossy was a former NHL star with the New York Islanders. He spent his entire career with the team from the 1977 to 1987 seasons. He was pretty much an integral part of their Stanley Cup winning teams. Remember, they won four in a row. He was also part of what was called the Trio Grand. That was the front line of Mike Bossy at right wing, Brian Trottier at center, and Clark Gillies at left wing. Now, Mike Bossy, he set NHL records for goals scored as a rookie at the time with 53 that year. That wasn't broken until 1993. He won the Calder Trophy for Rookie of the Year, won the Lady Byng Trophy several times for leading scorer. He was a second-team All-Star his rookie year. He went on to win, as I said, the Stanley Cup with the Islanders in four straight seasons. from 1979-80 through 1982-83. He scored at least 60 goals a season in those last three Stanley Cup years. He was the first player to do that. He was also the fastest to record 400 career goals and 500. He was a seven-time All-Star. He had career marks of 573 goals and 533 assists, a record-setting nine straight seasons with 50 goals and five total seasons of 60 before he eventually retired at age 30. Had injury problems. He averaged, listen, he averaged 57.3 goals per season, had a record of 85 career playoff goals. He eventually went into several business ventures, including getting into broadcasting. He included a stint on the MSG network, which is a huge hockey network back in the day. He rejoined the Islanders in their front office. He's got most of the goal-scoring records that still stand, two of them as a coal holder with Wayne Gretzky. Yeah, not exactly light company there. He announced last October that he had lung cancer, and he died of the disease last Thursday. Yeah, definitely one of the all-time greats in NHL history. Now, Friday, we had a few losses, which included Hall of Fame music executive Arthur Roop at age 104. Art Roop's first love was gospel music, but he eventually built and ventured into blues and jazz and rock and roll. Two of his notable discoveries, Lloyd Price. Know who that is? Personality Walk, Personality. Yeah, Lloyd Price and Little Richard. Yeah, exactly. Monday, kind of a sad loss. Maybe you'll recognize this song. Yeah, Monday, the world lost Canadian guitarist and singer-songwriter Jerry Doucette to cancer at age 70. His debut album, Mama Let Him Play, which is the title of that song, that brought him moderate success. He never enjoyed that level of success again, at least outside of Canada. He became a part of the Vancouver music scene around 1972. This Mama Let Him Play, this album was released in 1977. And he and his group won a 1979 Juno Award, which is sort of like a Canadian Emmy, I guess, or Grammy. They won 1974 Juno for Most Promising Group. Like a lot of people in the business, trouble with record companies. And then, at that time, punk and new wave came along. That was a major part of his lack of follow-up success, I'm sure. That's a good song. Hear it in Iowa City all the time. Woodfields and the Fieldhouse would play it a lot. So welcome Holger to the conversation as well. He should know it too. He's a Midwestern guy. I mean, we count Minnesota as part of the Midwest. So Gary Doucette, gone at age 70. Then finally today, we lost another centenarian, Argentine actress Hilda Bernard at the age of 101. Now looking over her bio pages, about the only thing I recognize among her work, and it's not something I've ever actually seen, is her role on Argentina's version of the show The Nanny, where she plays the mother of the titular character, which is based on the role made famous in the U.S. by Fran Drescher, which, of course, is probably the worst role Fran Drescher ever could have played. She was much better in The Hollywood Nights, and, of course, this is Spinal Tap. No doubt. Come to think of it, isn't it kind of sad that people base their vision of life on certain movies? Like, remember in Lost in America, Albert Brooks' character based his life off of Easy Rider? Or you hear about mobsters that base their lives off of Godfather or Goodfellas or whatever. Meanwhile, you got me. I base my movies on my life off movies like This is Spinal Tap. Yeah, as Nigel Tufnell once said, it's quite unbelievable. Sad, though. Sad to see someone gone. Gary Doucette never made it as big. So, you know, good song. I like it. It's a good song. But let's stop it for now. And before we get to our news items, let's not forget my friends at Alliance Communications. I want to give them a shout-out. They're a 24-hour call center and messaging service in Central Florida, but serve all over the country, even international. give them a call, 1-800-555-3738 or alliancecommunications.com. They serve small, medium-sized businesses, government accounts, special projects. And really, you know, like I've said before, those companies that aren't going back to the office, you know, those companies that are closing, they've said since COVID, we're not going back. That's perfect. That's right up their alley of the type of company they can help most. So let's start with an item I missed on last week, coming off the high of our cruise. And my wife and I, our two trivia contest wins two times. Yeah. Anyway, here's the April 7th story from the Epoch Times. And the reason I'm bringing it up like this, it's a great example of January 6th and what a farce it's become. A federal contractor was acquitted by a federal judge April 6th of four charges in relation to entering the Capitol on January 6th, 2021. Now, if you'll remember, January 6th, 2021, I had my friend Rich on that day on his way home from the event. And if you'll remember, when he was hearing the reports from me and others, he couldn't believe what he was hearing because he said, that's not at all. It was nothing like that. And he said, not only that, cops knew who the Antifa people were out in the crowd. They knew Antifa was setting off these false fires around the city to draw cops away. Anyway, a judge said prosecutors failed to prove that Matthew Martin, who worked at the Los Alamos National Lab in New Mexico, failed to prove that he committed crimes when entering the Capitol for about 10 minutes. He said it was a judge, Trevor McFadden, U.S. District Judge, a Trump appointee. He said it was reasonable for Martin to believe that outnumbered police officers allowed him and others to enter the Capitol through the rotunda doors. He said Martin's actions were about as minimal and non-serious as anyone who was at the Capitol that day. Now, according to court filings, he attended a rally held by former President Trump on January 6th. Before going back to his hotel, he heard the Capitol had been breached. He went back and eventually entered the Capitol. Now, as he says, while he was at the top, they started letting people in, and so he joined in. They were holding the doors open. Yeah, he told an FBI agent that during an interview. Now, he testified that a police officer waved him into the building. A prosecutor said that was nonsense, although the government later acknowledged in a filing that police officers stood on either side of the doorway as the defendant entered the building. Videos showed two police officers standing near the doors and allowing people to enter as Martin approached. One of the officers appeared to lean back before Martin placed a hand on the officer's shoulder as a possible sign of gratitude. Yeah, the judge described his testimony as largely credible, said it was not unreasonable for him to believe that officers allowed him to enter, even though alarms were blaring and broken glass was strewn about. He also said there was no evidence that Martin intended to disrupt Congress from certifying the election, the bogus election results. He said he was a silent observer. They even have a screenshot of him standing there. Not, you know, some people holding flags. No, nobody waving guns. Amazing. People on cameras, people on cell phones. You're seeing no violence. Yeah, he's acquitted of four misdemeanor charges. His lawyer said the definitive factor was that he did not break the law. We had the benefit of a lot of video evidence, and the judge had a chance to see it. Martin says he's very thankful for the verdict, hopes to get his life back and his job back. Here's what's interesting. More than 775 people have been arrested in connection with the event. Approximately one-third of those, so 200, I don't know. What am I thinking? Yeah, roughly 275, I would say, have entered guilty pleas. About half of the approximately 110 people sentenced have received jail time. Now, he chose a bench trial versus a jury trial. He was the first defendant acquitted on all charges. Now, in another trial, remember, Judge McFadden acquitted Cowboys for Trump founder Cui Griffin on one charge, but held him responsible on entering restricted grounds. Remember, there's only one jury trial to wrap up. That was the one that convicted Guy Reffitt on 5 counts. So here are a few observations I have about this, besides the fact that it's great news. Look, it's becoming more and more obvious that judges are going to look at actual evidence. They're going to look at video. You know, they're not just going to take government lawyers' word for it. It's pretty clear. Police officers holding doors open is not a great way to say don't enter the building. Just saying. Police officers standing there holding the doors open is not a great way to say, quote, don't enter the building. I'll tell you something else. Those who have taken pleas probably should have waited, may want to think about amending or changing their pleas. Those who have served jail time might want to think about having their cases reviewed as well. Mike's not available today, otherwise I'd have him to talk about it. Here's another one. Opting for a jury trial is about as smart in this particular instance as taking a guilty plea. I mean, seriously, why would you let a jury, especially a D.C. area jury, decide your guilt or innocence or your eventual fate? Finally, Ray Epps was an FBI insider, and Donald Trump won the 2020 election. Yeah, I said it. Okay, so Colin Kaepernick says he wants back in the NFL, and he says he's willing to be a backup. That's easy for him to say. He's got that Nike contract where he got millions for being a racist. It's not like he needs starter money. Here's the weird part. While most think he won't make it, except maybe former Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields, some of the folks railing on him are a surprise. One of them in particular is Stephen A. Smith. Yeah, that Stephen A. Smith. Here's what Stephen A. said. Here's some of what he said. He basically said he's been very clear. It's gotten on his left nerve. He says Kaepernick was blackballed, was mistreated. He should be in the NFL. He got screwed over. He said, how many times do we need to say that before Colin Kaepernick is willing to accept the fact you got to handle things differently? And what does he mean? He says, well, I'm not talking about the kneeling. I'm not talking about the protesting. He says, that's on behalf of us, and there's a level of graciousness and gratitude we all owe him. He says, black people, as far as I'm concerned, America owes this to Colin Kaepernick. He says, but that was from 2016 to 2019. What he took issue with was Kaepernick not taking any of the help that was then given or failing to take advantage of it. He says in 2019, after he files a lawsuit against the NFL, after he reaches a multi-million-dollar settlement, after you made it clear you don't have any trust for them, and they made it clear they have no trust for you, but because of pressure from Jay-Z, who is obviously advising the NFL on social justice issues and things of that nature, along with a multitude of people inside and outside the media, he said, the NFL, we're going to conduct a workout. And Colin Kaepernick refused to do an NFL workout because of some stupid waiver or liability issue. He says, at the end of the day, what you are saying, Colin Kaepernick, you didn't trust them? Well, duh. We already knew that. They didn't trust you because they felt like if an individual team, none of whom called you, by the way, if an individual team gave you a workout that you would sit up there, if you don't make the team, you might sit up there and accuse them of being racist. So as a result, they can't really trust you either. He says both sides don't trust one another. Who the hell doesn't know that? But he says instead of taking Jay-Z's help, regardless of the media's help, regardless of public fury against the National Football League, that's no, Stephen A., you're wrong on that one, but you still didn't trust anybody. He goes, you want to listen to your lady and your crew, and you want to debunk everyone else, and here you are having a conversation about football. He says, you haven't played in 5 years. We don't know what you can do, but we still believe in you. Could be on an NFL team right now because he's gifted, but that's not the point. So the point is coaches and players and executives all answer to owners. They don't really want to touch you. He said you had one in and you refused to exploit it. Yeah, exactly. He said, go work out. Show him what you can do. But he didn't. But Kaepernick says he absolutely wants to play in the NFL again and is even willing to return to the league as a backup quarterback if that helps his comeback chances. 5 years of training behind the scenes. I got news for you. That's not 5 years of training. It's 5 years of training behind the scenes. He says, I want to come in. If I have to come in as a backup, that's fine, but that's not where I'm staying. And when I prove that I'm a starter, I want to be able to step on the field as such. I just need that opportunity. You already lost your opportunity. You did this. You did this because you lost your opportunity. You were already replaced as a starter. So I ask this then. Oh, God, why do I have to continue going over this? But here's the facts. Can't make all the throws, as well as pretty much any starter in the league. On top of that, his arm is really no better than most of the backups either. Now, yeah, I'll give him this. He runs well. Guess what? So did Cam Newton. So did Vince Young. For that matter, so did Vince Evans. Who cares? The position is quarterback, not running back. Now, in his defense, I'll give him this. He does throw reasonably well running to his left. So as a matter of that, he's very effective when running to the left. But again, that's hardly enough to build a team around, and not only that, teams learn to defend that. Three, he acts like he's doing the league a favor by saying he'll be a backup. But as Stephen A. Smith points out, he's been out of the league over 5 years. His skills have certainly diminished, and there's hardly any guarantee that he gets them back. So I ask this, why? I mean, he's got the Nike money. He's got the NFL settlement money. Would he blow it already? I mean, seriously, if he wants to come back because of, quote, love for the game, why wait until now? Number five, we have the XFL and we have the USFL coming back, and there's always been the CFL. Why has he never attempted any of those, either pre-COVID or post-COVID? Because those were in effect before COVID. Taking a little trouble getting them, but now USFL wasn't, but you had the XFL and you had the AAFL, and you've always had the CFL. Finally, I got to ask this. Why in the hell does he want to take a job in an organization that Kaepernick himself says is the very model of modern-day slavery? Seriously. I mean, would you willingly adopt or opt for slavery, especially as a backup slave? Yeah, I'm willing to be your, I know, I'm not going to be your franchise slave, but I'm willing to be your less privileged slave. What in the hell? Why? Why are we still dealing with this guy? Okay, we got a guy coming in who, well, I would say he needs no introduction, but he's going to get one. He's getting it right now. Holger, what's up, buddy?
How are you? Well, we always like to hear the Minnesota Viking horn.
Why aren't you jumping all over Kaepernick?
Believe me, Minnesota Viking fans are very excited about all the changes this year.
So you think maybe they take a flyer on him?
It's amazing what a new coach and a new general manager will do for the psyche of an organization, that's for sure.
Yeah, a fan base that has a lot to gripe about, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So what's going on, man?
I tried to catch you before you moved into Kaepernick, but because I had a comment about the guy that got was acquitted on the charges there of January 6th thing. So my question for you was this, is if you and me were arrested and charged with robbing a bank, okay?
Yep.
And we went to trial, and we were acquitted of all charges of robbing the bank.
Okay.
Then would it be, could you say that there actually wasn't a bank robbery?
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't mean there was no bank robbery. It just means that we weren't held guilty in that bank robbery.
So here's my question. I noticed this week that the purge, this insurrectionist purge that's been going on now for a long time, that they have, so far they've successfully are blocking Marjorie Taylor Greene from even running for office because they've charged her with that one provision in the 14th Amendment that if you're, you know, if you're involved in any way in an insurrection, you can't hold office in Congress.
Right. But I mean, but she's not upheld on that yet, is she? I mean, she's not ruled out yet.
No, but the judge just ruled that she can be taken off the ballot. So now she's appealing that. But if she loses the appeal, then she won't be on the ballot, and obviously she won't, you know, she won't be reelected if she's not on the ballot.
Right. True.
So, what my question is this: is, you know, maybe I'm wrong here, but has anybody actually been charged with insurrection in the events of January 6th?
Charged with insurrection. Well, let me look real quick. I'm going to Google it while we're sitting here. Have there been insurrection charges? For January, for 1-6-2021. Let's just see. I mean, there's an updated list. Here's an updated list, but I don't see anything that actually says insurrection. It says at least 818 people have been charged in the Capitol insurrection so far. Now, here's a searchable table. This is from insider.com, so you can guess how, you know, here's its first line. A pro-Trump mob descended on the Capitol. You know, I mean,
but I think if I'm not mistaken, you know, people have when it came down to the nitty gritty, when they had to, you know, literally had to charge them, officially charge them. I think they charged them with, you know, criminal trespass on federal property or conspiracy or something, blah, 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 blah. But no, if I'm not mistaken, nobody has actually been charged with insurrection. So my point being is, you know, this judge goes through this whole review of this 14th Amendment petition by these people in Georgia saying that they don't want Green allowed on the ballot, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, how can you keep someone off the ballot for insurrection when actually they're, if no one's been charged with insurrection, then how could there be an insurrection? In other words,
I looked down the list and I saw nothing. I saw it's mostly like, you know, illegally entering a dwelling. You know, I'm not even sure the guilty pleas. I'm not sure anyone's actually taken a guilty plea and or been convicted of obstruction of the electoral process.
No.
You know, I mean, I know that guy Perry, whatever, Refit, or not Perry, God, I should have pulled the show or the thing back up. What was that guy's name? I had him right in here. Okay, so here we go. What's it? Guy Reffitt. Guy Reffitt. Yeah, he wasn't. I mean, he was acquitted on illegal stuff. He was convicted of illegally. They acquitted him. No, that was okay. That was Guy Wesley Reffitt. So five counts, including civil disorder, but nothing of insurrection and nothing about interfering. In the obstructing an official proceeding, an obstruction of justice. But I mean, that's, you know, that's not insurrection. He didn't. I mean, I'm not even sure there was an insurrection charge. No, there wasn't.
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean,
it's that, you know, it just kind of surprises me that a federal judge would.
Yeah, remove
it's
somebody
like putting
from
the cart
ballot.
Before the horse. Yeah.
And, I mean, how is he?
So.
And I'm trying to see. You know, gosh, you know, you look online, and most of what you see are things like, you know, I mean, there's no CNN. I really don't want to see CNN's view. You know, I mean, it's Rolling Stone. I mean, the Google, when you Google it, it pulls up the Rolling Stone, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and CNN. So tell me how many pro Marjorie Taylor Greene articles am I seeing there? None. You know, well, New York Times does say, though, the judge that ruled it was not a federal judge. And even the New York Times says only the feds can keep them off the ballot. Only feds can disqualify them. It can't be at the state level because, you know, it's not that what they're citing is not a state level. I mean, it's just so that's the New York Times.
No, they're citing the 14th Amendment is what they're citing.
Right.
Is where it states this and stuff. So, I, you know, the whole point being is, you know, it would be like me and a group of people in Minnesota saying, okay, well, you know, bringing an action where Ilhan Omar cannot be on the ballot this fall for the midterms because, I don't know, she conspired to smuggle a jihadi bomb into the House of Representatives. Okay, yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah,
you know, it's just make something up. I mean, I'm sure these people, these legal minds, you know, got together with the people from the Department of Justice and stuff and said, okay, so when you bring these people that you've brought into prison for a year on this insurrection deal, you know, when you got to charge them, it's going to be pretty hard to prove insurrection when none of them had a weapon.
Yeah, that alone.
It's like,
I mean, look at you when you look at the guy that was just acquitted. When you look at the photo that includes him, you're literally a third of the people are sitting there doing what everyone else does all through dinner, looking at their damn phones.
Yep.
You know, I mean, literally, these people are inside the Capitol on their phones, looking at themselves inside the Capitol. I mean. That hardly strikes me as the insurrection type. I mean, it just kind of, you know.
So bottom line is you've got people that have been in a jail cell for over a year without bail for trespassing.
Yeah.
Think about that. I mean, it's like, it's like Hank and his wife go, you know, go someplace. Hank takes a wrong turn when he goes to the men's room and then finds himself in some back room and gets charged with trespassing. But there's no bail.
There's no bail. And there's no...
And you're in jail for a year.
And there are no resources. I mean, they've talked about the people that have pled guilty. And at that time, and now this was, you know, 6 months ago, but almost all the guilty pleas, those pleading guilty cited what? I have not had access to my home. I have not had access to my bank account. I cannot afford an attorney because a federal defender isn't required. I mean, it's just it's repulsive what's happened to these some of these people.
Oh,
it
crazy.
Really is. Yeah. Well, especially
so
when you hear about one of the next stories, the accused South Carolina mall shooter, $25,000 bail, which you and I know. $25,000 bail means what? It means $250 because a bail bondsman is going to put up the required 10%, and you got to give him 10%. Yeah. Well, any crack dealer can come up with $250 to get out of jail. This guy's going to go to work. Yeah. Go to work. But here, guess what? He's got to wear an ankle monitor.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not. Okay, let's look at it this way. If I'm at work and a guy shows up at work that's been charged with a gun crime, I personally, now this is just me, I'd personally like a little more insurance and assurance than a frigging ankle monitor. Like, well, Hank, he's wearing an ankle monitor. He ain't going to mess up now. Yeah, other than drawing a gun at a mall. Yeah, you're right. This guy's probably harmless.
Yeah.
And this guy's got nothing for bail. Nothing. So,
here goes further.
Most of those people in January 6th don't have priors. This guy, he's got a prior. He was involved in a shooting in 2018. That shooting death of a 17-year-old. Now, it's not clear whether he was accessory before the fact, but this isn't his first round with a gun, or his first go-round with a gun, and he's getting bail, but there are people who are not getting bail simply for going inside the Capitol building, and frankly, they were let in.
Yeah. And some of them were charged with the trespass, with being on the grounds, because some of them were charged for just going around a barricade. They weren't even in the Capitol. They were on the grounds. You know, I mean, it's like, to your point about the mall shooter, you know, you've got people in Portland who were arrested because basically they shot some sort of a fireworks kind of explosive into a federal building, causing $30,000 in damage to the building, who were out on bail that same night.
Yeah.
Okay, so they used a weapon, and they caused damage to the physical structure of property of the United States of America. And they're out in bail in 24 hours.
Well,
these people have been in jail for over a year for walking around a barricade.
Yeah, well, if you remember Dudley Moore in the movie Arthur, you know, he talks about when the guy says, "I killed a man when I was 12." He goes, "Well, when you're 12, you don't even know there's a law against that." Well, same thing. When you're in Portland, you don't even know there's a law against defacing federal property. I mean, my gosh, what kind of a law is that would penalize a guy for blowing up blowing off fireworks in a federal building? Why, it's just Portland. I mean, I've never been to Portland. Have you ever been there?
I have been there a couple times.
Was it ever worth going to?
It is absolutely one of the most beautiful cities. I mean, as far as scenery and stuff, I mean, it is an incredible city as far as it's just a very cool setting for a city. But
like Seattle.
You know, but it's a hellhole.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like Satan put hell right in the middle of the Garden of Eden.
That's a good way of putting it. So, well, I mean, I used to want to go. Now, no desire whatsoever.
No. So the other thing on Kaepernick, I just wanted to add this for you that if the reason, here's my reason why Colin Kaepernick has not been called by, you know, any NFL team, is if you Google Colin Kaepernick, there's this box that shows up on the right. Because I Googled how old is Colin Kaepernick. Okay, so it says he's 34 years old, but there's a box to the right, and it says an information box, and you know, when he was born and what his height is and who his partner is and all this bullshit. But it says Colin Rand Kaepernick is an American civil rights activist and former football quarterback.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's been more successful at that than he has as a quarterback. But
if I'm an NFL owner and some pimple-faced jerk kid Cub reporter from the Portland Times comes to me and says, how come you haven't given Kaepernick a chance? And, well, you know, we checked on Kaepernick, but, you know, he isn't even listed as a quarterback in Google. He's listed as an activist.
Yeah,
so we tend to hire only football players.
Yeah, we tend to want a guy who takes football, who puts football first.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, 5 years out of the league, I'm sorry. But what I really don't get, it boils down to this. I mean, I gave all my reasons why this is so messed up. Why? Literally, why less than a year after you have said that the NFL is the very model of modern-day slavery, do you want to play football in the NFL? Literally.
Well,
maybe
he's out of money.
That's what I ask. Is he out of – I can't believe that. I cannot believe that. I mean, what was his contract with Nike? It was huge. I mean, it was undisclosed, I think, but it was huge. I mean,
he probably had to give 90% of that to BLM.
That's his agent. That's the thing. I mean, that's my overriding is he's out of money. It's sad. You know, if he's out of money, it's really sad. But I mean, it's dumber still when he then says it's the very model of modern day slavery, you know, and that he wants to go back. I mean, it's literally like saying all women suck. I hate women. I'm through with women because I've been burnt so many times. So, Holder, what do you say we head out to a strip joint tonight? I mean, you know, it's not quite on that level, but it's darn close. I mean, why is this guy who says the very model of modern-day slavery, those were his words, but he's willing to be a backup? it's like I'm not even opting for lead field hand. I'm opting for the guy who has to go get the water for the field. I mean, what the hell? You know, that's what I don't understand.
So when all of this happened, when he got, you know, when he started doing the kneeling and all that kind of good stuff, and then eventually was released by the 49ers, okay?
Right.
Was he the starting quarterback or was he the backup?
He was not. He was not. He had lost his starting quarterback job. Now, I think there might have been, you know, he'll say there was injury issues and the team might have even said that. But no, he had lost the starting quarterback job. He was not the starting quarterback. And that coincided perfectly with when he started kneeling.
Yeah.
He had that good year where near the end of the year after an injury to the previous starter, he got the start and he did help lead them to the Super Bowl. But guess what? He was that one. He's that rookie who the first half of his year in the Major League Baseball, no pitcher has ever seen him. So nobody has figured him out. So he hits 32 home runs by the All-Star break. And then the second half, and they say it's rookie burnout. What it really is pitchers have figured him out. The same as the guy who can't go to his left, but for the first half of the NBA season, this guy goes to his right real well. Once everybody figures out he can't go to his left, they lock off the right, and he's a very average player. That's what has happened here. He was very good at running to his left and throwing to his left, which made him effective running to his left. Once teams started to figure out, you know, and guess what? This isn't college. Where a Vince Young can dominate all year, you know. Vince Young found out once he got to the NFL that sidearm throwing style was not quite what NFL leaders were looking for. You know, I mean, it's just he's very. I don't want to say average. He's not a bad player, but no, he had lost his starting job, and that almost perfectly coincided with his kneeling. So.
Well, I think my point being is that obviously the activists spin it that, you know, he's being blackballed because of his activist views and all that kind of good stuff. Whereas my claim is that no NFL team has looked to seriously bring him on board because he's not good enough. And my point being is that there are, you know, you could name probably 50 professional athletes in, you know, the NFL, the Major League Baseball, the NBA, hockey, NHL. You could name probably 50 athletes who have have absolutely been a toxic, you know, element on their teams, who have been kicked off of teams, who have been arrested by authorities and given second chances by other teams because they're so brilliant that they have such pure ability.
Yeah.
You know, where people, you know, the teams will hire them and they're like going, oh my God, I can't believe they're taking a risk on this guy. Well, they do because they're so good, they're willing to take that risk.
Well,
but they
Indy
won't
Hawk,
call him Kaepernick, not because he's going to kneel again, but because he's just an average fucking quarterback.
Indy Hawk pointed out, two straight years with the quarterback rating in the 40s. His last two seasons, three wins against 16 losses. I mean, literally, you know, if he were pitching for the Twins and he were 3-16, would you be – I mean, now, Stephen A. Smith, delusion aside, would you be clamoring at one, you know, Twin Cities place or whatever the name of the stadium there is? I mean, would you be down at the stadium office clamoring for this guy to take the mound next opening day? Hell no. I mean, if a guy shoots
– especially if he was – especially if he was 3-16 and he hadn't thrown a pitch in 5 years.
Yeah. And if a guy is 3-16 from three-point land every night, do you really want him representing your team in the three-point contest? I mean, it's just beyond – I mean, but it's sad in the sense that Stephen A. Smith has to temper it with, you know, you belong there, brother. We the league needs you. But, no, I mean, Stephen A. Smith can't even bring himself – to say, as a sports guy, hey, he was 3-16 with a QBR in the 40s 2 years in a row, and that Super Bowl season was long past, and, you know, he got replaced.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, sadly, that's what it's all it is, nothing more. Yeah. So,
well,
you know.
I think it's sad that he gets any attention at all, quite frankly. So.
Yeah, but I think you're right. I mean, it's one of the things I said, is he out of money? You know, because if he is and he's doing this, then it's really sad. But then, again, why not go to the CFL? I mean, back in the day, you remember Iowa had some good players that went to black players that went to the CFL back in the 50s. Because as they said, the CFL treats black players better or more equal. Well, why doesn't he go to the CFL? You know, why doesn't he go to the XFL or the USFL? I mean, those are all options if he really wants to prove that he can play, then go prove it. But we're not gonna take a flyer on you right now, 5 years out of the league, and toxic besides, you know, and 3-16 over your last two seasons. You know, go prove it somewhere else. And guess what? He's got a place to prove that. So.
Yeah.
So, all right, anyway.
Buddy.
Thanks for calling, Holger. Good talking
all
to
right.
you, and hey, good luck with the Vikings. Maybe they'll pick him up. You know, you could get your dream
to
come true.
considering what we pay our quarterback, we don't really have the kind of funds to grab another one.
Well, who's their star? Is Cousins still the starter?
Yep.
So yeah, you're stuck with him. You are stuck with him. Well, hey, good luck with it. There's always
all right,
draft day.
Catch you later.
Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
He nailed it, of course. What I didn't want to say, because I don't want to come off, I mean, it's not shyness of sounding like a racist or nothing like that, but it really is. I really think, damn, did this guy run out of his money? Because it makes it sound like, I mean, I know it's making me sound like, oh, he's just some idiot who couldn't manage it. No, that's not what I'm saying. He could have run out of his money, though. And if he did, and that's the reason, that's sad as hell. I'm sorry. That is sad as hell. But fact is, you know, he's once back in, and there's no reason for teams to take him. As I was saying to Holger, the accused South Carolina mall shooter, $25,000 bail. He can go to work wearing an ankle monitor. He did turn himself in. His attorney, by the way, South Carolina State Representative Todd Rutherford, a Democrat, of course, who claims it was in self-defense. Yeah, sure it was. As I said, he'd had a previous go-round. He gets to go to work wearing a damn ankle monitor. You know, we always hear cries for gun control, or at least more restrictive gun laws whenever something like this happens. Why instead are we not screaming loud and clear about a judge that would allow such low bonds? No, as I said, believe it or not, 25,000 bond is not huge because it doesn't mean $25,000 cash. And then allow him to show up at work with an ankle monitor. The other thing I ask, is it me or is it just coincidence that every time Congress, president, or somebody starts in on, quote, gun reform, that we have these kind of events? I mean, it's damn near Pavlovian, really. Gun law proposed, school shooting. Executive order declared, post office shooting. I mean, really, law or order or some other provisional measure approaching sunsetting status, you know, like a law sunsets, boom, shooting. I'm going to touch on this a little more at rant time. Okay, so Dopey Joe and La Dopey Nostra have released $180 million of oil from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserves. As somebody pointed out, 1 million barrels a day leading up to midterm elections, by the way. Anyway, it's supposed to lower gas prices to U.S. consumers. Here's the problem. It's hard as hell to do that when some of that oil... Now, how much has not been specified, but Holt showed me that he sent the tweet. How much of that oil, doesn't know, but some of that oil is being sent to Europe, supposedly to aid exports from Russia. This is unbelievable, of course. It's even more unbelievable when you realize market analysts strongly believe that the ban on Russian oil could result in prices of crude oil as high as $185 a barrel. As in 4.5 times the $43 per barrel for crude, Brent crude, in November 2020. As in, while gas was about $2 a gallon in Central Florida back then, it could theoretically go as high as $9 a gallon in the not-too-distant future. Oh, and on top of that, with Elon Musk staring the crap out of Big Left with his apparent takeover of Twitter, Tesla cars are suddenly coming under fire. Especially their autonomous vehicle. Yeah, suddenly left is down on Tesla cars. Who would have thought? Wonder if Colbert is going to sell his. How the hell will the average family be able to eat, let alone put clothes on their kids? We know they won't be able to put gas in their cars. Or as it's becoming more prevalent, put gas in their singular car. According to Matt Smith of KPLER, they're an oil and commodities data analytics company. This is the first export of SPR crude since last November. So, again, why the hell do we have a U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve if we're going to send it everywhere else? And how in hell can we do that if we eliminate our oil production? Most of us have been saying, first of all, that Dopey was obviously clueless on all this. He's just a puppet. Second, in light of that, it's pretty obvious, especially with the La Dopey Nostra trotting out Barack Obama on the campaign trail, that this is simply a third Obama term. So knowing that, it's not a shock that they want to – all they really want to do is implode the U.S. economy. They want to make as many people as possible dependent on a central government. He and Big Left want control of the central government. Nothing more, nothing less. But it still pisses – you know what, though? Here's somebody pointed out as a joke, but it's not funny because it could probably happen. If we're sending oil to Europe at a time like this from our strategic petroleum reserve, let's hope they don't decide that they're going to send absentee ballots or just mail-in ballots to Europe as well. Yeah. Meanwhile, as I said, I mentioned Elon Musk, who, by the way, I like more and more with each day. He moves to possibly buy out Twitter. He filed with the SEC, which is standard when you acquire at least 5% of the stock of a public company. And, of course, Twitter's board of directors, led by outgoing founder Jack, probably on crack, Dorsey, they employed a poison pill in the form of share dilution, which allows employees and existing shareholders to buy up shares at a huge discount, thus dilutes Musk's ownership percentage. Problem, as Florida Governor Ron DeSantis notes, Twitter's board has abandoned their fiduciary responsibility to pension funds. States like Florida are going to see a sharp decrease in fund values with moves like that. You know, if other people do that, if other companies get the idea to keep doing that, that decreases the fund value of a Florida pension fund. As Governor DeSantis pointed out, this also came after Elon Musk had offered to buy the company at roughly a 20% premium, $54 a share. Yeah, Governor DeSantis, man, I love this guy. I really do. He's hinted that Florida might do several things to hold their board accountable. By the way, Elon Musk has said if he does acquire the company, he will stop paying the board members. They'll receive about $3 million a year. But DeSantis says the board is simply trying to prevent further erosion of legacy media and its bias against anything conservative. He hinted Florida could divest the pension funds of their Twitter stock, which would naturally send it tumbling, especially if other states follow along. Think about that. If five states dump Twitter shares, they could also impose sanctions or restrictions on Twitter and any of its entities that operate or do business within the state. And Twitter better know Ron DeSantis means business. I'll tell you why with this next item. Florida recently passed House Bill 1557, a.k.a. the Parental Rights Act, which Disney has suddenly, after employees and company activists told them to, come out against it. Now, they were sort of against it, but now they've come out rabidly. The bill says basically that schools, teachers, and districts can't withhold information from parents. It gives parents the right to receive information immediately. And if you read it, you'll notice something. The word gay doesn't appear anywhere in the bill. Neither does the word transgender. Now, it does prohibit discussions or teaching about sexual orientation and gender identity in certain grades. Yeah, what sane school district wouldn't agree with that, by the way? Anyway, Disney came out in opposition. And then when certain elements within the company cried and screamed, they went a bit too far. They pledged money and time to fight the bill in the courts as well as contribute to campaigns against those who voted for it and signed it. Fine, right? The problem? Well, like Disney operations almost everywhere in the U.S., the company enjoys almost complete autonomy. In Central Florida, they own and operate within what's called the Reedy Creek Improvement District, which was created in 1968, I believe, or 66. This means they have their own infrastructure. They have their own tax district. They enjoy tons of municipal protections that other companies don't, including their competitors like Universal, SeaWorld, Busch Gardens. I'll give you an example. Years ago, Disney's own law enforcement was basically sweeping certain crimes under the rug. What kinds? Well, the usual. Theft of rooms at their hotels, traffic violations by certain Disney cognoscenti, and yes, sexual assault and rape. Covered and became a real problem when Disney wasn't doing anything about some of these cases. Literally, Orlando Police Department, Orange County Sheriff, Osceola County Sheriff had parents and families calling in on behalf of the victims to those agencies inquiring about the status of the cases. Literally. They were getting calls, and they were like, well, we don't know anything about it. We don't have anything on this. Well, it turned out, you know, well, my daughter and her friends were at a party at the, you know, for spring break at a Disney hotel. One of the girls says she was raped. Well, how come we don't have any? Well, didn't occur in our, that's Disney. Well, of course, Disney has nothing on it. So, yes, they had to compromise. But how do they benefit? I'll tell you how. How do they benefit now? Go there. Go to Disneyland. Go to Disney World. You will never, and I mean never, ever, see uniformed police within their parks. You might see Disney security guards. You might see rent-a-cops, but you will never, ever see a uniformed Orange County Sheriff's Department or Osceola County Sheriff's Department officer inside their parks. Now, they are allowed in, but only outside of uniform. They are allowed behind the scenes and even in some of the hotels. But guess what? Not in uniform usually. Now, Disney is now required to allow them in as consultants and observers, and crimes that occur there are still dealt with by the appropriate agencies. Given, you know, Disney does straddle several towns and cities and counties. So guess what? The Florida Senate has passed a bill eliminating the Reedy Creek District. But not just that, as well as other districts like it around the state that were created before 1968. Yeah. Just as Disney was starting to flourish and build there. But it includes districts all over the state, which is brilliant because it can show that the bill isn't just aimed at Disney. Like I said, brilliant. Look, I'm under no illusion that Disney is powerful, and I appreciate what they contribute to an area in terms of economic impact, but it doesn't give them the right to attack individual lawmakers or candidates, nor does it give them the right to foist their morality and their ideology wherever and on whomever they choose, citizens be damned. So, yeah, that's why I love Ron DeSantis. And a nice little poly sports item, Kentucky legislature has overridden a veto, crack Governor Andy Beshear, to essentially block boys from competing in girls' sports. Yeah, Governor Beshear cited the Kentucky High School Athletic Association policy that mandates that males who undergo sex reassignment after puberty must take hormonal therapy in a verifiable manner for a sufficient length of time to minimize gender-related advantages in competition, blah, blah, blah. The governor goes on to say that the bill, quote, most likely violates the equal protection rights afforded by the U.S. Constitution. Okay, please explain this. How exactly does a bill that protects females violate the Constitution's equal protection clause? Please explain minimize gender-related advantages in competition. What the hell does that mean? Shouldn't the goal or the rule be to eliminate gender-related advantages in competition, not minimize? And how many, by the way, how many kids are undergoing sexual reassignment before puberty? Frankly, on top of that, please define sexual reassignment. Please define sexual reassignment. Are we talking actual surgery? Because I'll tell you what, a guy with a crank taking some drugs and putting on women's sports attire doesn't necessarily mean sexual reassignment. I'm going to go to the be-all, end-all on this. That's the Happy Days episode where Richie and Potsy have to dress up as girls and get a guy to dance with them in order to join the demons. If you remember, Richie got picked to dance by the Fonz. Hey! The Fonz was obviously fooled, as evidenced by his blowing into Richie's ear until Richie finally alerted him, much to the shock of the Fonz. The lesson here, you can dress a guy up like a girl. You can put him in a wig. He can even parade around enjoying himself. But the bottom line, unless he gets fully clipped and loses everything, he's still a guy. A weird guy, perhaps, maybe even a nutcase. But he's still a guy, not a girl. That he would want to compete as a girl, all that really means, it doesn't mean he's looking for rights. It just means he has a mental disease. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. He just has a mental disease. Hey, quick break. And the reason I'm taking this quick break is so that I can play something for you. Play the Iowa fight song, because we're going to talk a little bit of college sports when I get back. And we're going to play a little something from Back to School that will reiterate some of my findings here and some of my thoughts. Be right back.
So why don't we dive right in by interpreting one of the easiest events in the last 20 years of American history. Now, can someone tell me why in 1975 we pulled our troops out of Vietnam?
The failure of Vietnamization to win popular support caused an ongoing erosion of confidence in the various American but illegal Saigon regimes.
Is she right? Because I know that's the popular version of what went on there. And a lot of people like to believe that. I wish I could, but I was there. I wasn't here in the classroom hoping I was right, thinking about it. I was up on my knees in rice paddies with guns and inward going up against Charlie, slugging it out with him while pussies like you were back here partying, putting headbands on, doing drugs, listening to the goddamn Beatle album.
Hey, Professor, take it easy, will you? I mean, these kids, they were in grade school at the time. And me, I'm not a fighter. I'm a lover.
Well, I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helper. But since you want to help, maybe you can help me, okay? You remember that thing we had about 30 years ago called that Korean conflict? Yeah, where we failed to achieve victory. How come we didn't cross the 38th parallel and push those rice eaters back to the Great Wall of China and take the work brick and nuke them back into the fucking Stone Age River? How come? Tell me why? Say it! Say it!
All right. I'll say it. Because Truman was too much of a pussy wimp to let MacArthur go in there and blow out those commie bastards!
Good answer. Good answer. Like the way you think. I'm going to be watching you.
He seems to care.
Good teacher. He really seems to care. About what, I have no idea.
Yeah, that's how I've been feeling, reading some of the stuff as I get back and get into news and stuff over the past week. So anyway, we're going to start off something not quite so about Big Ten media rights negotiations. Now, their contract stuff is up, and so Big Ten is negotiating with various sports things. Here's the interesting part. They have two senior Fox Sports executives acting as their media consultants. Fox Sports president and CEO Mark Silverman and executive vice president of business Larry Jones have been in the room listening as people from rival companies are making their pitches for the conference's rights package. Now, who's in there? Amazon, Apple, CBS, ESPN, NBC, Turner Sports. Now, that's interesting. Remember, I had Tyler Goodson's mom on a couple of years ago. Her husband, I know, at one time worked for Turner Sports. I'm not sure if he still does. Here's where he goes a little off the rails, this author, John Orend is his name. He says, Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren leads these meetings, of course. He has run the conference for 3 years and has final say on which company ends up with the rights. Okay, well, whatever you want to believe there. Now, here's the thing. Here's what's interesting. Essentially, Fox Sports owns 51% of Big Ten Network. Go from that premise. Here is likely what this means or what it could mean. As I said, I said this back in 2016. I said this was going to happen. I said the Amazons, the Googles, the Microsofts, the streaming people are getting into the sports programming in a big way. And people were saying, oh, no, that's not true. I'll tell you why they are. Because live sports draws viewers. High viewership entices ad buyers. Ad buyers make it palatable to buy media rights for live sports, even on a limited basis. Why? Again, because it's huge. Only reason, in a lot of cases, to have live TV is the sports. I don't need to see Law and Order under whatever incarnation. I don't need to see that live. I mean, I've even DVR'd sports when I couldn't absolutely watch it live. But, I mean, would I rather watch sports live? Oh, hell yes. Now, we kind of knew way back when NBC and Notre Dame got into their exclusive agreement, that would eventually run its course. Now it's time. It's run its course. NBC is bidding on Big Ten rights. ESPN and SEC, or otherwise known as ESECPN, that looks to be long-term. The question really becomes, which of those two is going to be more controlling? And my guess is it won't be long before ESPN, as a result of SEC pressure, shows nothing but SEC sports, maybe even to the exclusion of pro sports, who knows? Oh, and of course, soccer and poker. They got to have soccer and poker. It's only because nobody else wants to cover soccer and poker, except once or twice a damn decade. There's footprint, there's population, and then there's viewership. Despite the general population shift downward, despite having better football teams, the big, you know, in terms of the SEC, the Big Ten still commands the day when it comes to media and viewership. Why? Alumni base. They still have the largest alumni base of any Power 5, Power 6 conference. End of story. It's just fact. Will it always be that way? Of course not. But while it is, networks and streamers and cable operators are going to want a piece of the Big Ten. And then there's production value. Now, some people might disagree with me, but I know what the hell I'm talking about here because I've watched enough of it. There is production value. Right now, believe it or not, production value of Big Ten Network and Fox Sports News is better than anything else out there for college sports. Yes, ESPN and ABC have some horses. So does CBS when it comes to basketball. But in terms of overall production value, facilities, and personnel, Fox Sports News and Big Ten Network have taken over. And when it comes to relationship between Fox Sports News and Big Ten Network, it's primo. Simply put, between all of them, SEC, between all of them, Dave Revson is the best studio host in college football. And as a backup, Rick Pizzo ain't exactly far behind. And on Fox News itself, while there's no individual as good as Revson, as a team, they are top-notch. They are better than the ESPN crew, whether it's in-studio or the game day crew. And frankly, if Big Ten Network wants to give me the keys to revive Friday Night Tailgate, there's five of us in my chat group, on our text group, that would tear the hell up, as in way up, in Big Ten cities. I'm telling you, a Big Ten Network, revive Friday Night Tailgate, me, T-Bone, Indy, Hawkeye Mike, and Brother Tommy will go into the Big Ten venues and tear it up. You will have a show like no other. The presence of Fox Sports as media consultant is fantastic. Other than Kevin Warren, who could screw up anything with a little push, the idea of the Big Ten leadership teaming up with Fox Sports is gold. It's a natural out if they don't like what they hear, or they could push for more from the various outlets. It's absolute gold. It really is. Now, I'm not sure, like I said, what John Urend is thinking when he says Kevin Warren will have the final say. The 2020 football season pretty much showed how ineffective a leader Kevin Warren is. No, John Urend, the decision will, like usually, ultimately be made by leadership of the Big Ten schools. And that is why, overall, it's still the best conference in in college sports. Let's get to Chuckie Schumer on Easter. That's almost embarrassing. Almost. He used resurrection imagery at an Easter Sunday church service. Now, let's forget the fact that he's Jewish or that he's trumpeting the confirmation of KBJ to the Supreme Court. Here's what he says. The stone has been rolled away from the tomb. Oh, the irony. He then began his sermon, if you want to call it that, by saying, "Brothers and sisters, the last time we got together in person for Easter, it was 2019. I was still minority leader. Donald Trump was terrorizing New York and our nation with his hatred, his bigotry, and lies, and little did we know what the future held in store for us. To sum it up, it's been a dark few years." Continued, "But on this day, more than any other day, we remember God's promise to his people. That was once thought lost will be redeemed and renewed and more glorious than ever before. That even in the darkest times, there are bright lights. And this month, folks, we witnessed one of the brightest that we hope is a metaphor, an indication, a good omen of more bright lights to come. The confirmation of Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson." Here's another one. "Restoring balance to our judicial system that was thrown out of whack by Donald Trump and his vicious, nasty, and sometimes even outright racist appointments to the bench." He says, praised himself, said, "We made history by appointing for the time, first time ever, our three black U.S. attorneys in New York." Yeah, nothing says, God. He says, my brothers and sisters, in conclusion, this is what the changing of the seasons looks like. It looks like progress. It looks like growth. It looks like our everlasting struggle to perfect what was once imperfect. Lord knows it took too long to get here, but now that we're here, there's no going back. The stone has been rolled away from the tomb, and all those good things that we hoped and prayed for will come to pass. So happy Easter. God bless all of you. Good Lord, does this guy mix metaphor? I mean, I'm not going to get into a religious discussion. Here's some words that come to mind. Blasphemy, idolatry. He's so far off. First of all, he doesn't even believe that as a Jew. And I'm knocking, but I'm saying, no, it's just, one comment in the thing said, if no need to be united in Christ if you're not united in politics with Chuck Schumer, I guess. Nothing says apolitical and nonprofit like chuckles at an Easter service, not to mention cultural appropriation. Foul on chuckles. We'll make it a flagrant one for now. Okay, I said I was going to talk about this. This is it. We got 12 and a half minutes. I'm talking about rights grabbers. Now, I've seen it in recent years. We all have, mainly from Big Left, complaining and crying and whining and, yes, flat out advocating. Advocating for what? The termination of certain rights. In essence, if you own a gun, voted for Donald Trump, and believe January 6th was a setup, you need to go to one of Robert Reich's re-education camps. If you sit in office as a Republican and vote contrary to the beliefs of Paul Krugman, you should be banned from office. If you offer to buy a social media company with plans to make it accountable or make it truly open, you should be banned from owning it and should be stripped of your wealth. Besides, according to the gals at The View, if you hunt, you should go to jail.
That's right.
Some feel so strongly they threaten to leave the country every 4 years. The problem, of course, is that they never do. The bigger problem is that some hide behind the First Amendment, but see no problem stripping you of your First Amendment rights, as well as Second Amendment, pretty much any right you have under the Constitution. But for Big Left and people like Robert Reich, Paul Krugman, and Big Tech, along with the gals at The View in particular, the Bill of Rights really sticks in their craw. Why? Is anybody's guess. But in essence, it's about control. But Brother Tommy nailed it on Zuckerberg a while back, Zuckerberg and his ilk. They got beat up out by the bike racks in middle school. And through their wealth and their lust for power, they exact revenge where they can. Here are some contradictions. For instance, lawfully own a gun? Why, you're subject to punishment for the crimes of others. Demand election integrity, and you should be barred from voting or holding office. Desire to retain what you earn, and you are subject to the whims of someone more powerful who can exempt themselves but force you to pay for people whose votes they need. Question the integrity of an election or protest it, even when evidence shows at least part of the power elite was complicit, you forfeit your rights of speedy trial. As Holger and I discussed, you lose your job. You face almost impossible odds to live normally again. You question the legitimacy of government's alleged scientists, and you can be forced to stay indoors, close your business, even be injected with an unproven vaccine against your will or without your parents' knowledge. Yeah, God forbid you want to stay in your child's education or upbringing. And as Holger pointed out in a retweet, what Elon Musk has done is expose that Twitter is not a real company, but rather a global censorship cabal. What should happen to these people who infringe on your livelihood, strip you of your rights, all while hiding behind some of those same rights? Well, I'll tell you. Start with this. Someone saying Donald Trump sucks or Governor DeSantis is a racist doesn't infringe on anyone's rights. Now, yeah, it makes the people who do it look stupid, but it doesn't infringe on anyone's rights. So here's what I'm talking about, what I'll call the incendiary example. Last year, former Secretary of Labor under President Clinton, Robert Reich, who is now a college professor, he wrote that those who served in the Trump administration and even some of those who voted for President Trump needed to face a Truth in Reconciliation Commission and possibly even be required to undergo some sort of reeducation. Granted, this guy's a psycho. his economic ideas are beyond laughable. So much so, in fact, he makes Bernie Sanders look cogent. And before you claim it's his right under the First Amendment, what I'm proposing is penalties for people who advocate and push for stripping other people of their rights. As a starter, Robert Reich, you lose the right to vote. Oh, sure, you can still work. Hell, you can even campaign. But no longer are you allowed to have any say in something that could affect the rights of others. That's it. You lose your right to vote. You also lose or forfeit any gain from your offenses. If you wrote a book advocating taking away someone's gun rights, especially gun owners who have not committed any crimes, you should forfeit proceeds from that book. Again, you can still work, but no longer can you profit from the attacks of rights on others. Feel like throwing around your corporate power? Watch it. While, quote, big corporations routinely come under fire from big left, they have no problem taking big left's money, but no longer. Attack a company, or worse, attack as a company, and maybe tax status should be affected. Maybe tax exemptions should be lost, truly lost. I don't mean by people like Lois Lerner. I'm talking when a leader of a nonprofit speaks out in a political manner, they should lose. That organization should lose their nonprofit status. Frankly, why should Disney have its own municipality that isn't subject to the same corporate responsibility? Case in point, Disney can serve alcohol till 4 a.m. Orlando and surrounding communities, 2 a.m. You think that hasn't affected local business over the years? There's a place in Orlando called Church Street Station. That was part of what killed it. People weren't coming from Disney, the Disney area, to Church Street Station anymore because Church Street Station had to close at 2 o'clock. Disney could stay open till 4, their bars. So what should happen? I'm not saying kill these people. I'm not even saying put them in jail. I'm saying when these people say things like, I need to go to re-education camp, maybe I'm not the problem. In fact, I know I'm not. Maybe these people, maybe it's not enough to say, oh, they have a First Amendment right, because maybe they don't. You know, there's the fire in a crowded theater. It's illegal to shoot fire, say fire in a crowded theater. You can't do it. It's not a First Amendment. It's not protected under the First Amendment. Well, guess what? Neither is infringing or advocating taking away the rights of others. You know, if you shoot someone with a gun and you're found guilty, you lose your Second Amendment right. Well, that's normal. I mean, that's perfectly rational. Now, let's get past the irony that people like Robert Reich and Paul Krugman and the gals on The View are actually advocating for felons to have rights restored to vote. But yet, take away rights for people who don't agree with them. Well, why are we sitting around and letting that happen? Why isn't a Robert Reich or a Paul Krugman, but he's not as offensive, but why isn't a Robert Reich facing a little commission of his own? Why isn't he called to account when he says you should... I mean, he literally said re-education camps. Does he not understand how that sounds? I mean, it's literally Soviet and Nazi and Red China that we're talking about. Holder says yelling fire in a crowded theater isn't a First Amendment exemption or exception. Well, they always say that. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. You know, it's not protected by the First Amendment. But in any case, when Robert Reich exercises his First Amendment right to trample on my rights, there's a disconnect. And we've let it go on far too long. Now, hopefully, Elon Musk buying Twitter might change some of that. I mean, it's bad enough that Twitter is throwing people off, but allowing others to stay on who are, yeah, I mean, Well, Holdren himself is under about his 12th incarnation. But yet, you know, Black Lives Matter is, you know, is allowed to be on there. Ilhan Omar is allowed to say stuff on there that, you know, forget AOC. She doesn't threaten people. Ilhan Omar does. Some of these mullahs and imams do get on Twitter and I mean, advocate violence. I mean, they advocate the destruction of Israel, the eradication of Israel. But we're supposed to sit there because it's their First Amendment right? No. The right to infringe upon the rights of others is not protected. It's simply not protected. Let's not just call these people out. We need to get our representatives, our senators, our governors, our presidents. We need them to protect our rights. That's what government is supposed to do. I mean, anytime you hear government has the right, no, they don't. Government does not have rights. Government has restrictions with regard to our rights. Government doesn't have rights. Holdren says you can yell Timmy Pete in the pool at a community swimming pool. You know what? They're going to take you out by the bike racks like they used to do to Zuckerberg. You do that. So let's hold these people accountable. Let's not allow Robert Reich to tell us we need to be reeducated. Let's not allow Paul Krugman to tell us that we can't be capitalists. You know, there was a guy talking about the Twitter stuff last week, and he said, you know, we're talking about Elon Musk. He says, I'm a capitalist, but darn it all, it seems to me that a person shouldn't be allowed to possess more than a certain percentage of the world. I had to explain to the guy that you're not a capitalist. I mean, you said you're a capitalist. Everything you said after that pretty much belied that fact. But that's what we literally have people on Twitter saying, I'll leave if Elon Musk buys it. Why? Elon Musk isn't going to take away any of your Twitterverse. He's not going to do anything on Twitter. What he's going to do is allow all people to have their voice. And apparently you have a problem with that. God forbid you get taken to re-education camp because of it. And that's it, folks. Got everything done that I wanted to say. I want to thank Holdren and Indy and Vito for being in the chat room. I want to thank my big sister and T. Bodie. I now have seen his number. Sue in the chat room. Holdren for a great call earlier. Go out and get Kaepernick, Vikings. Do it. In the meantime, have a great weekend. Stay safe. Getting lighter later out there. So have fun as we approach spring and summer. In the meantime, stay safe. As I said, have a good weekend. And we will be here next week, 5:30 on the dot. Have a good one, folks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Hey.